Welcome to the Geeks of North podcast, a hobby and gaming podcast from La Belle Province, brought to you twice a month, every month. I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to episode zero of Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast from La Belle Province. And for those that don't know, that means Quebec in Canada. We're local to the Montreal region. I'm Paul Filion, here with my co-host Antoine Bergeron. Hey Antoine.
Hi Paul.
How's it going today?
It's going fine, you?
Oh, not bad, not bad. We'll see how it goes at the end of this. Nothing like first episode jitters.
Oh yes, we'll see.
Yeah, so let's get right to it. So as this is episode zero, why don't we kind of do an introduction about ourselves? Maybe I'll put you in the hot seat first, and you can tell people, you know, about your gaming history. And
okay, I'll go back. I started gaming in elementary school, reading Choose Your Own Adventure novels.
Right.
Which went through, they had a special line that was a RPG, but in that format book.
Right, you had the little character sheets at the back?
Yeah, yeah, and it was you had to have a game master and like a RPG, but undo small books. And from there went to HeroQuest, Dungeons & Dragons, and all that in elementary school. And just as we got to what we call secondaire in French, which is
high school.
Yeah, at the start of high school, discovered miniature wargaming and didn't stop. So that's 22, 23 years ago, something like that. So went to board game, miniature game, RPGs, LARPs, a bit of console / computer gaming, and a lot of Games Workshop, more Warhammer Fantasy and 40K at the start. And after a while, switched to as many games as I could get my hand on. So I love to read rule books. I love to paint. I love to hobby. I like to do terrains. So I'm all around hobbyist.
Well, yeah. I mean, we know you love to do terrain. I mean, some of your terrain was used at Gen Con last year and at TempleCon.
Yeah, for the Underlimb guys.
That's right. I got to use my expert base coding skills for those tables, yes.
True, true. You were a big help.
No, but at least you didn't have to do the tedious stuff. I could do that.
Yeah, you still brought them to Gen Con. Without you, they were not there in time anyway, so.
Oh, it's true. That's right. I brought some of the terrain pieces packed in my luggage. I remember that now. Yeah, jeez. Okay, well, you've got a lot more street cred than I do. So I started gaming in elementary school. Started with D&D, like everyone else. And then, because I grew up out in the country, well, so did you, actually.
Yes.
But I didn't have easy access to rule books. So one of my friends had come down from Montreal, had introduced me to D&D, so we played a whole weekend of D&D. And then I said I really wanted to do this, but there was no stores locally to buy this stuff. So what I ended up doing was making up my own RPG to play with a couple friends. We used to do it on the school bus every day to and from school, which was about an hour drive.
That's really cool.
And then one day, while I was playing on the bus, the guy in the seat behind us, who was a returning student, so like an adult student in high school, asked me if we were playing D&D. I'm like, well, no, because I don't have D&D books. It's like D&D, but, you know, not. And he's like, well, why don't I just give you some D&D books? He's like, you know, I've got D&D stuff. I'm playing Advanced Dungeons & Dragons now. I'm not using the D&D books, so, you know, I'll give them to you. Or he's maybe sold them to us for $10. I don't remember. It wasn't a lot in any case. So then that was the first rule book. And then from there, I actually managed to find a place about 20 minutes away from home that did have a small selection of books. So it started growing, and I started buying miniatures. You know, original Citadel miniatures before there was a Warhammer, before there was anything. Used by Citadel miniatures and the Forgotten Realms Ralpartha, like, box sets of miniatures.
Yeah, from TSR back in the day.
Yeah. So, like, the Dragonlance miniatures, like, yes. The Tanis Half-Elven and all that. It was a box set, Raceland, all that. And you know, so I played D&D all through high school. And then I came to Montreal, and I'd never heard of miniature wargaming. I didn't know it existed. I mean, I thought miniatures were just there to kind of represent characters in an RPG. And so I stumbled across some friends in college in the gaming club playing 40K. And then eventually they were playing Necromunda. So basically a second edition 40K and Necromunda.
Yeah, skirmish.
Yeah, exactly. And Space Hulk. And, you know, that was cool. So I started collecting Space Marines. Didn't actually play any 40K. I just collected Space Marines, started my Ultramarines back then. And then, you know, I finished college, and again, the miniatures kind of got packed away, and that was the end of it until around 2004, where I started, you know, talking to those friends again, and they wanted to get back into 40K. By then, third edition was out, so we started playing third ed. And then since then, I basically haven't stopped playing. So mostly a Games Workshop product guy, so lots of 40K. I had a Fantasy Army for years, only recently started playing, as you know, since you're the one who introduced me. But, you know, over the years, I've played pretty much every major miniature game that's been out, and a few more eclectic ones. I'm not the miniature game master like you are, with 8 million different miniature games under your belt, but fairly broad taste in miniatures. You know, and that kind of brings us to where we are today.
Yeah, something we might add with some other friends from college. We're running Club Chaos, which is a small, not really a gaming club per se. Other people can subscribe. It's just a name we add in college for the group, and we kept it. It's a bit stupid to call us a club, but still. And we run a Chaos Clinic locally, which is a miniature convention, so miniature gaming tournaments. So
yeah, well, this year, so, and you've actually combined it with another group.
Yeah, another group is doing all the Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40K parts of the running.
So that's Northern Defenders, right?
Yes.
Right. And I think that's who B. Steve goes and plays with at like Adepticon. Didn't he play with them last year?
Yes, he did.
Right. And for any of you people who follow other podcasts or Twitter, and may know B. Steve from Canhammer. He's actually a local and a friend of Antoine's and acquaintance of mine. Yeah, and so back to Club Chaos and Chaos Ludzik. So it's a Fantasy 40K and War Machine tournament this year?
And Infinity.
Infinity.
This year, it's the first year we do it on 2 days. So it's a big first. It's the fifth edition this year. Yeah, fifth edition, and we're passing to 2 days. First day is all team tournaments. So Fantasy team, 40K team, and those are doubles. And right. We have a War Machine team tournament, three-man team.
So, and that's like the TempleCon format, right?
Yes, where exactly. Most big conventions have a similar format to that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So it's three-man team, but people don't play together. They play against the opposing
player. So you're playing three the same individual rank. Games?
Yeah.
Team against team?
Yeah, but you add the scores.
Right, and you combine score. Okay. Yeah. Oh, right, and I think you have to delegate someone to be like your commander?
Or yeah,
like
you have a lieutenant, sergeant, and captain, lieutenant, and sergeant.
Okay.
And they play against the same ranked on the opposing team.
Okay.
And once in the tournament, the captain can choose to switch to player.
Okay.
Before the game. They don't switch during the game. So before the game, so if a matchup looks horrible, or if you want to play against an arbitrator because it might be a fun game, which we did at TempleCon, Guillaume wanted to switch because the people of the different rank than him played against him the year before, and he liked playing with him. So he just switched for the fun of the game.
Okay, all right. So you're not really locked in with the ranks and stuff. You can still
move. You're locked in 4 out of the 5 game, or
right.
It's not that bad.
Okay, interesting. And each tournament is what size?
Oh, for the team, I think 40K and Fantasy are around 1,000 points.
Okay, I actually meant number of players.
Oh, number of players. Warhammer Fantasy Battle is 30 teams, so 60 players. 40K okay. is 20 teams, 40 players.
Yeah.
And for War Machine is 16 teams, so 48 players.
Wow, so that's quite, and that's all playing on the same day?
All playing on the same day, all Saturday.
So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a big turnout.
It's like 150 people.
Yep.
Well, 148 or whatever.
Yep, exactly. And on the Sunday, we have all singles event, so Warhammer Fantasy singles, 40K singles. We have a War Machine hardcore.
Okay.
We are not officially hardcore because we are only 16 players, and to have a real hardcore with the hardcore trophies,
yeah.
You need 32 players. But we don't have that size yet.
Okay.
But still. So we have a almost hardcore, 16 players. We have a War Machine casuals, So it's a smaller point size with
so I guess that's probably 35 time. Points.
Yeah, 35 points, but we play with 50, with the 50 points time limit.
Okay.
So people have more time. So
is that close to like steamroller type rules? Is that...
It's a steamroller, but adjust for the for the bigger time limit. And after that, we also have a Infinity ITS format, 16 player 2.
Okay. Oh, is this the biggest Kiss of the Zik you'll ever have held?
Yes.
I guess so, because it's 2 days all of a sudden, so it doubles your attendance, 2 days, right?
It's double the attendance. The only bigger one, well, it won't be bigger, but before last year, we were doing it with other stuff than just a tournament. So,
that's right. You had like painting workshops and stuff. I remember that. Yeah.
That was hard to manage at the size we had. So we went down to just running the tournaments for a couple of years, and we'll see in the following years how it goes if we grow enough to be able to afford a venue that gives us the space to do that.
Right. Yeah. Because you need a lot of space for that, and that's big bucks, and it's hard for. I mean, we don't have in Canada, or at least in Quebec in this region, we don't have the same type of turnout or demand that the U.S. has for a lot of these events.
Right? True.
So,
but we're doing good. We're looking at 220 to 240 players, maybe. So it's already good. We're 2 weeks in registration.
Mm-hmm.
And we're over 50% registered already.
Right. Wow. Okay. And that event's in October, November?
Yeah. October 11th and October 12th.
Okay.
Yeah. And registration are open. So if you want to register or need information, chaosludic.net. So chaosludik. So ludic is an alternate word for game in French.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
So that's why we use that.
You dirty francophone.
Yes.
To any French listeners, I'm just kidding.
Yo, and to all the others, that's why I sound strange. Hoping it doesn't bother you too much.
Oh, like I said, if you listen to any of the European podcasts, I mean, that's going to be even harder to understand, right? Wow, okay, so, and the thing is, I've never, it's funny, all the years I've known you, I've never actually been to a Chaos Logic event. I always show up.
You went to help pick up the stuff.
Yeah, because I was always away on vacation or a family thing or whatever, so I only arrive at the end to help clean up, but I've never actually seen the event. So hopefully this year I can maybe drop by and either participate or check it out.
I hope so.
Get an idea how it's all working out. Okay, well, I guess we'll take a little break and we'll come back and talk about what we're doing in the hobby. Welcome back, everyone. This is now we're tentatively calling the Hobby Time segment, for lack of a better name. So we figured we'd share with you what we've been doing in in terms of hobby for the past few weeks, or in my case, past 6 months. Antoine, we'll start with you again, because your hobby is more interesting.
Not that much. I didn't do that much in the past few weeks. I painted a Color Sergeant Major. That's a Britannan Trooper for Relics by Tor Gaming. They have a small painting contest to celebrate their new gaming page, their new Facebook group page.
Okay.
So it was done this week, and I also entered it in Color Tourmonde, which is a local painting challenge. We do a monthly painting challenge with a different team each month to help people fight the gray plastic fight.
Fight against the ever-present gray plastic, the tide of
the
gray plastic that threatens to overwhelm us all. Yeah, I hear you.
And the sea of tin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you said it's themed. So what was the theme last month? Just give the listeners an idea.
For Color Tourmonde, the theme was star player. So either a model that do a lot of work in your army, or that cost a bunch of points.
So you're star. Okay.
Yeah. And just speaking about Color Tourmonde, we're switching to the new team this month.
Okay.
And this month is the month of the archaeology. So we're going.
Right. So it's with, archaeology. So it's any
researcher, explorer, something like that. Think Indiana Jones or also to make it easy for people who don't have anything that fits in that. You can also do archaeology with your gaming stuff and go for anything that you have that's in the bottom of your pile that you haven't seen for years.
So time to get out my Rogue Trader era, like, chaplain on jet bike.
Yeah, but with your gaming room, anything might be archaeology. You find stuff every day. So
it's only bad when I start finding stuff like colossals that I didn't realize I bought. It's like, oh, there's a $150 model here I didn't know I had. Look at that. Yeah.
So
my gaming room's a little special, so we'll discuss that on another show.
Yeah, that might be a show in itself. Apart from that, most of the locals here received their Relic Knights pledge.
Right, yeah.
I got after the Kickstarter. So I did some assembling, some cleanup, and I tried the first game too with Yom, another of the locals. You might hear in the further podcast.
Right, yeah, because he wants to hot seat with us and stuff. So that should be interesting because he's a professional painter and pretty much well-rounded gamer, a lot of experience. So it should be interesting to have him on the show.
And that's about it. Now,
you work on the Relic Knights, and how did you find those models? Because I know there's been some critiques about the sculpts and the detail levels.
How could I say that? Some of the details were lost in the new medium. That's clear. I have Cersei Speed Circuit and Shattered Swords. And those two factions are like the two extreme you might find. I didn't go through all my Cersei stuff yet, but one of the mechanics has no face. You see two eyes and a blank face, as if you saw like a gray alien.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But the other girl in the same box is fine.
Okay, so they can't really say it's a stylistic thing. No. Because I've heard that argument that, well, you know, it's supposed to look anime, and anime, it's a big eye, small mouth, not necessarily a lot of details. Yeah. You know,
the details are not sharp. They're small, but they're present in most of the models. But in that case, you have one that clearly didn't translate well. So is it a mold problem? Was the sculpt just not good enough?
Subpar?
I don't know. And on the other end, you have Shattered Swords, which are the paladins. And the face and all the details are super sharp for models of the same size. And if you just go to the Royal Wrecker, which is like an exosuit for Cersei, even there the details are fine. So some are hit or miss. I think there's more hit than miss, which is fine.
Yeah, see, I haven't really opened my Kickstarter yet. I kind of sorted it all out and, you know, double-checked, make sure I got everything. I was actually missing something, but they're going to be nice enough to send that along. But I haven't opened the box to really check.
Yeah.
Well, what's the material like? Is it like Privateer Press?
It's like Privateer Press or Mantic plastic. So
it's rustic.
Yeah, it's kind of rustic, so it's a pain to clean up. There is mold lines.
Because it's very hard.
But contrary to Privateer Press, they didn't fear to split them all in 10, 20 parts. Okay. So some models have a crazy number of parts, which is a lot of cleanup, but at least the mold lines are better placed.
Because I still remember my Menoth Bastions for Privateer Press, where the mold lines go right through the filigree detail on their chest, and there's just nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, exactly. So for that, it's a lot better. The material is still not exactly the best we see in the industry, but the mold lines are at least better placed.
Okay. It also means you have to put it together with crazy glue, right? Because plastic glue won't bond it.
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't have any problem assembling it. Everything stuck. I heard some people complaining that the glue didn't take, but it might be...
Maybe they didn't clean the models first and there was the
or
mold release on
the
them or
kind
something.
Of glue or... I don't know.
Maybe they have some 3-month-old Zappa Gap that doesn't work anymore, like all of my models.
Yeah, maybe.
Get no luck with crazy glue. Doesn't matter what brand I try, it's all the same.
And mine was all fine, so...
Yeah, I hate you. Okay, I don't really hate you. You know what I mean. Okay.
So what did you do?
Okay, well, so give the listeners some backstory. So I've been trying to assemble a Warriors of Chaos army for an event upcoming later on this year. And, you know, when I had this great idea to build this army, it was also about the same time as my wife decided to deliver our baby. So, you know, shame on her for cutting into my hobby time. No, I'm just kidding. I love my baby. But it basically means there's not been much time for hobby. And I'm the guy known in our group for how fast I paint. I may not be the best painter in the group, But the speed I paint and the quality I produce for that speed
is incredible.
Yeah, it's usually pretty good. My Warriors of Chaos, the infantry, the warriors themselves, I had it down to about 45 minutes a model, which meant I should have had the whole army done probably by March. And as it stands this afternoon, I was still working on that same damn squad of warriors because I can't get anything done. They're pretty much done at this point. I got to finish the bases. Did all much of the metallic state, much of the details. By the end of the week for that army, I should have 6 Skull Crushers of Khorne completed, 30 warriors, and a Nurgle Demon Prince. So a big chunk of the army is complete. I just want to say it's all your fault that I have to do this.
Yeah, sure. It's my fault.
It is absolutely your fault. See, Antoine last year decided to invite me to a tournament. So I get a call one night. And he's like, hey, Paul, there's this team event coming up. Do you want to go play? I'm like, sure. Sounds like fun. I've always wanted to learn to play fantasy.
You were also saying that you had tons of armies. I didn't know none were painted.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, how many points? He goes, 2,500 points. I'm like, okay, I can have 2,500 points, no problem. Like, full painted? He goes, kind of preferred. I'm like, okay. Like, so when's the event? Oh, in 4 weeks. So, yeah. Paul speed painted a 2,500 point, I think was the biggest list.
Yes.
2,500 point high elf army. So I get to the event, and I am the only Forces of Order army in our team. Now, me not really knowing what I was doing, because I'd only played, I think, 3 games by the time that tournament came around.
Maybe 3.
Yeah, because I think we played 3 games during the course of the day. We played 4 at the event.
We played 3 at the end.
Right. Yeah, so my last game, I remember, was my 6th game ever. So, yeah, I played 3 games before the tournament. So I had no idea that, you know, what allies would do in this game. And I come from 40K, right? So I'm like, oh, whatever. You know, I guess it'll be some minor penalty. What I didn't realize, though, is that the magic pool was shared.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's a standard.
It's split and not shared.
Sorry, yeah. It's one magic pool for the whole team.
Yes.
And what happens is if your armies are of opposing factions, then you have to split the pool as evenly as possible, and any extra dice you roll off for to see who gets.
Even not just opposing. If you had a neutral army, like Ogre or Tom King, it's still split.
No, it wasn't.
No?
No, so what happened... Well, I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
So, just going back. So, High Elf army, right? You know, kind of, you know, magic dependent in a lot of ways. On 2d6, you're going to average 7. Which means, generally speaking, you're going to either 3 or 4 magic dice, which means my magic phase sucked so bad, and it crippled our team. Every game I played, I felt so bad because I was crippling our team. Now, we did okay. I think about 50% of things what we did.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. And you weren't the only, how did you call them? Force of Order?
Yeah.
Yeah, because one of our players... had to cancel because of the
family
kids
emergency.
Were sick.
Yeah,
and it was subbed by a dwarf player who had no magic anyway. So,
yeah,
it's even worse with the dwarf player because we take half of the dice, we give them to him, and we know he won't even use them. So the two of us, the demon and the dark elf player, had 3 dice for her whole phase or something like that. So,
yeah, at least he was a great guy.
True,
for a pickup that we didn't know at all until the event, like. And it worked out really well. I mean, the event was super fun, but when I came back for that, I decided, no way am I going back to this thing with a stupid good guy army, since everyone I know plays an evil army. So I went through the Games Workshop website trying to find something. Warriors of Chaos, the only army, aside from maybe Vampire's Counts, that was appealing visually to me. So I said, okay, I'll pick that up. And yeah, so I've been working on that ever since, and it's just slow going.
Yeah. But they look really good.
Oh, yeah, no. When they're done, they'll look good. I mean, I won't win any golden demons with them, but I think they're definitely, like you said, they're a tabletop plus, right? They're not tabletop standard. They're pretty good standard.
That's true.
Yeah. Thank God for airbrushes. It almost feels like cheating.
Almost.
Yeah, I don't feel bad.
I'm not even that good with it yet, so it doesn't look like cheating. It's more work for me now.
No, it's funny, because everyone in our group, I got an airbrush, and actually, I'd had an airbrush for years and not really used it, and I started using it, and then everyone in our group kind of bought airbrushes. And really, I'm still the only one using the airbrush. No one else, I mean...
Guillaume uses it a lot.
He was telling me he doesn't really use it a lot, because he's like, I don't know how to do some of the things that I do by hand with the airbrush.
Yeah, true.
So even though the airbrush would make it easier, like OSL and stuff...
He does it with the airbrush.
Oh, because he told me that he still does a lot of it by hand, just because he's...
Yeah, maybe some finishing touch, but I know he does the OSL by airbrush.
Okay.
I think so.
He just doesn't do it by... Maybe for his stuff, he's experimenting with it by airbrush. But maybe for commission pieces, he's doing it the way he knows how to do it and knows it's going to look good. Because, man, that must suck to have to... Because OSL is usually like last step.
Yes.
You screw that up on a commission piece that's got like, 20 hours in it or whatever. That's got to be horrible.
Yeah, that would be painful.
Yeah, so... I don't know if he's that brave. Anyway. All right, well, that's basically my hobby.
Anything then? You didn't play any game in the past weeks?
No. I want to get some games. I want to get Relic Knights, a couple of Relic Knight games in.
Yeah, so I want to play more. I like my first game, but the timing doesn't work right now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's the same with me, right? So, and I think I'm going to, hopefully later on this week, I'll start doing a unit of Dragon Ogres from our Warriors, even though I know they're not optimal.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We just play for fun. We're far from being tournament players.
Yeah.
We do play in tournaments for the fun of it to see... At least I do. I like going to tournaments, facing new opponents, but I aim for the bottom table.
Well, that's where you're going to have the most fun, usually. Right?
Yes.
I'll be honest. One of the reasons I don't like tournaments is I'm super picky about who I play with, so I just don't want to have to face some jackal the other side, the other end of the table, who's all about min-max lists and crazy synergy and no interest. My gaming time is so limited now with the baby that it's gotta be good or else, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to risk it being terrible. But yeah, so I was gonna start doing my Dragon Ogres. And I think I'm going to try mimicking a technique used by Master Fontaine. If you remember back in the fall, he did a dragon for...
G.R.R. Martin.
Yeah, George R.R. Martin, that's right. Yes. And he used a very interesting technique to do the scales on it.
Yeah, that's crazy a bit.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to go... To the detail level he did, because I don't think the Dragon Ogres are that well detailed, the scales.
Yeah, probably not.
But I like the idea that it gave them a depth that you don't normally see.
True.
The event's in October, so I'm trying to think what I have left to paint.
No, that event is probably just November, I think.
Okay, so
because our tournaments is in October, I think that's a month after.
Yeah, so
the list is not out yet, but it should be around the same time as last year.
In theory, the Dragon Ogres may not even make it into the list, the final list, because the two units of Skull Crushers will probably. Yeah, it depends on how nice I want to be. But I have to finish two chariots. They're assembled. And I think I've got them base coated, the metallics. And what else do I have to do for that list? Oh, a unit of 10 knights. Yeah, my unit of knights. And they're base coated too, so it shouldn't be too bad. I should be able to get everything done. So I can distract myself a little bit and do something for fun, like the Dragon Ogres, to try a new technique out.
Yeah, you already have enough, or almost enough, to play painted.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Those units of Skull Crushers are fairly big point costs and block of 30 warriors and a 400-point Demon Prince or whatever it's going to be. So, yeah.
Do you plan to work on something else than that or other game, other army? Or
I also want to start working on a Menoth force for TempleCon next year.
Yes.
Because I've never actually played War Machine in any type of tournament environment. So it might be kind of interesting.
It is.
Well, I know they also have some casual formats there, so maybe if I don't enter a tournament...
They even have casualer tournament. They have some crazy competitive ones, but they also have tournaments that's for more the other gamers.
Yeah. So there's that. And, you know, going into our next segment, we're going to be talking about Gen Con, we're going there in a week and a half. I'll probably end up picking up some other miniatures there I may want to work on, because you know, a bunch of locals have started playing some games. So I guess, you know what, we'll take a little break, and then we'll start talking about Gen Con, and we'll see where that goes. All right, be right back. And welcome back. So this is the main section of the show. We're going to talk about our main topic, which is Gen Con. So this will be Antoine's first Gen Con, my second.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. And we thought it might be interesting to share what we're going there to see, what we're going to be doing there, what classes we're taking, why we're taking them. Yeah. So I guess we'll maybe start with the classes we're taking.
Yeah, that's good.
So let's see. This is kind of ironic.
First one.
So the first class we're taking is one called "So You Want to Start a Podcast." This is funny because usually you take the class before you start the podcast, but I couldn't wait. So if we can record this and then we'll go next week, find out everything we did wrong.
Probably yes.
And, yeah, we'll come back and make changes for episode one. That's why this is episode zero.
Yeah.
It's like the episode that doesn't count.
Test episode.
Exactly.
We'll probably release it for a friend and maybe some other people just to have feedback. But it probably won't be part of the official feed.
You worry too much.
We'll see.
I've heard a lot of stuff that sounds worse than us, so...
Yeah.
You go back to a lot of other podcasts and their first few episodes, and some even not their first episodes, and they don't sound as good. So
we'll still go.
Yeah, well, exactly.
See if we've made big mistakes.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they're going to be talking about, right? Because, I mean, I know there's things to consider, like, how are you going to do it? If you're going to do it over Skype, you're going to do it like we are with a mixing board and recording locally and Skype in and features you need on the mixing board to support what they call Mix Minus, which is basically bringing a Skype call in and putting it out through the mixing board.
Yes.
I'm sure we'll learn something.
There will probably be talk about the feed hosting.
Oh, yeah, that too, because that's a big part of podcasting, right? You need to have some place to, you know, the repository to put your episodes, because they take space and they take bandwidth.
Yeah, and normal websites are not... Normal hosting is not built for podcast hosting.
Yeah, well, it's... You know, if you're talking... I mean, most podcasts are at least 100 meg file.
Yeah.
And they're probably... I would assume the highest download period is in the first 48 hours of release, as all the subscribers download the new episode. You figure if you've got 500 subscribers... at 100 or 200 megs an episode, all downloading at once.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot of bandwidth coming through all at one point, and regular web hosts isn't built for that.
No.
So it should be interesting. We're looking at a couple different options ourselves for hosting. We'll actually have to pick something before we go to Gen Con if we want to actually have this up.
Well, we could put that one on Dropbox or something like that, just for share. We'll see.
Yeah.
You'll know when you hear it.
true enough. Yeah, exactly. If you found this on our website, well, then we obviously hosted it somewhere. If you're one of our six friends who might listen to us, well, then, then we emailed you the Dropbox link. Okay.
So next class?
Yeah, so next class was improve your miniature figure painting from intermediate to advanced.
Yes.
I think this is more for me than for you, because you're a far more advanced miniature painter than I am.
I think it could still be interesting.
Yeah.
And advanced might be a big word. I'm not a professional. So I do good stuff, but there's still a lot to improve anyway. So.
Well, I think there's always something to improve, right?
Yes, sure.
Even you know, and I'll use his name again, Mathieu Fontaine. You know, I was reading his blog today, and I don't know when he wrote this entry, but he went to, I think it was a show called Euro Militaire.
Possible.
Which is basically it's a figurine show, miniatures, but military.
Mm-hmm.
Like historical and military, and you know, he was talking about the artists he saw there. And he said it was the best show he's ever been to. Because it introduced him to a different group of painters, different style.
Different view of the painting
world. And I think it's true when you look at competitive painting for our miniature games, all the high-end painters have a certain style and a certain look that becomes very common. I mean, they're all amazing, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, every painter looks the same. That's, you know, Wapol's work doesn't look like Fontaine's work, doesn't look like Haley's work, doesn't look like... It's just stylistically.
Yeah.
And I think that's more a limitation of the miniatures they paint, not their skill level or skill set. It's just the miniatures they paint. There's only so many different ways to paint a Warcaster or a Space Marine, right? So real life gives you a lot more variety. True. And in historicals, you've got a lot of material, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are so many lines of...
Well, exactly. Historical miniature. And scales.
And scales, too.
Right. There was this great bust that Mathieu Fontaine thought should have taken Best in Show. It didn't because it wasn't a historical figure, but it was a bust of a sci-fi... you know, Halo-esque soldier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the figure was from, but it was amazingly painted, and to the point where you could see the freckles on the girl's face.
Wow.
Yeah, like it was... Yeah, wow was right. I was amazed. How do we get on that sidetrack? We were talking about the class for improving the miniature painting from intermediate to advanced.
Yeah.
How the heck did I get onto Mathieu Fontaine and that?
That he was still improving.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that's right. And I guess it's the same with everything in life, right? You never stop learning.
Oh, sure.
Right. So what techniques are you hoping to look at? Because I don't remember exactly what the course covered.
I don't remember either. So I'm going...
I think it was... Wasn't it like blending and...
There was another we're looking at for... two brush blending.
Oh, that
we couldn't get tickets.
Oh, was that taught by an ex-privateer press painter?
Yeah, Meg Maples.
Yeah, Meg Maples
from Arcane Paintwork.
Yeah.
So our course sold out fast.
Well, that's all she does, right? Is the wet two brush.
Yeah.
Who was that? I was listening to another podcast they were talking about. Was it Bad Dice?
Maybe.
No.
Oh, who got their course? Scorpios? No, that's the. The Portland guys, so deployment zone. Yeah,
they had a, right. They just took it. Yeah. And there was three guys, and one of them was like, "Yeah, I can't learn anything because I suck at painting." But even I found the class useful.
Yeah, he's colorblind, so painting armies is a bit hard for him, but he still does it with help. But he does it.
That's funny. Yeah, I can't even imagine. I'm not colorblind. I have a hard enough time finding colors to paint stuff. Most of my armies are shades of dark. I think the technique... I'm pretty sure that also they covered blending and stuff in that class.
Yeah, probably.
We're going to have to look it up because I'm pretty sure that was what I was looking for because I have the hardest time blending. And doing transitions. I mean, with an airbrush, it's super simple. So I cheat for... Yeah. I paint stuff with an airbrush that I should never, ever be using on an airbrush, which consequently has made my precision with the airbrush amazing.
True. But, that's true.
You know, the stuff I do with the airbrush, no sane person would do.
Yeah, doing blending by end brush is pretty hard. Doing good blending.
Yeah, I just don't have the knack for it. I don't know if... You know, for the longest time, I thought, okay, I didn't thin my paints enough. Now I thin them, and I think I thin them too much because I have no control with them. Yeah. And, you know, the paint makes a big difference, too, what paint you're using.
Yes.
And also the brushes. Right now I'm using GW brushes, so I'm at the bottom of the barrel for brushes because all my good brushes are dead.
Yeah, you're waiting on an order for those.
Yeah, so I'm waiting on brushes from... I supported the Kickstarter for Ichiban Studios.
Oh, yeah, true.
So I got three sets. I had two of the early bird, and I ordered one additional set. The two early birds I gave to the people who ordered with me, which was you and Yom.
You were a bit too generous there.
Well, no. So I've got to wait till September for those to come. Though I think they may have a couple for sale at Gen Con, so I'll see if I can't get Sam to sell me one.
Yeah, because they're pretty good. So yeah. Well, having an extra,
you know, extra number two isn't going to change anything, right? So,
yeah.
You know, I'll probably pick up like a two and a one or a two and a zero, and you know, work with that. And I'm also looking at doing an order for Rosemary and Company.
Yeah, those were good.
Yeah, for value, Kolinsky brushes. I mean, they're no Winsor Newton, but they're close, and their price is a fraction of the cost, right? I couldn't get over. I mean, we're paying about $8 or $9 Canadian,
yeah, something
for
like
a Kolinsky Sable brush, like good quality,
instead of
like 20, yeah, or more, 20, 22, 23. So it's a big difference, right? Let's see what else we got here. So Antoine, you're taking a Kickstarter advice panel.
Oh yes, I have a small sculpting project. Well, not just sculpting, just small miniature project I'm tinkering with.
Okay.
And I'm listening to Kickstarter podcast, reading Kickstarter blog, just to get in mind, because I know I don't have the funds to produce that. So I will probably try to get it funded on Kickstarter. And if it works, it might be the start of a new small lines of miniature. But for now, I'm working on sketches, and I'm not even close to being done, but I'm getting all the information I can. So that's another source.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about it. And I won't say what your Kickstarter is or what your line is. You know, keep your ideas secret. Keep them safe.
Oh.
But I know you even looked at you're looking at casters and how much it would cost for casting.
Yes, true. So. I had some price from people in the States. I even had a local company, DreamPod9.
Mm-hmm.
I know some guys there, so I'm looking at maybe.
Let's be honest. We know everyone there, right? It's
well, it's small enough that yes, we probably know 90% of the people working there. But, yeah. So, I'm looking at that, looking at price for sculptors, too, because I know what I can sculpt. It might not be good enough for, like, professional bot miniatures. So, I'm looking at maybe having them sculpted.
Sculpted for you?
Sculpted for me, or outsourcing the sculpting, and looking for 3D or 3D sculpting, traditional sculpting, the difference, because the style I want is pretty cartoony, and I think the 3D works well for that. So I'm not sure yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think if you look at all the Impact miniatures,
yep,
like all their chibis, those are all 3D printed. And
it's probably half and half.
Half and half?
Yeah.
But again, well, just to say that it's cartoony style, and it seemed to come through pretty well.
Yeah, and even the another one, that Super Dungeon Explorer, that's really chibi but cartoon.
Yeah.
And most of them are 3D, but they still have traditionally sculpted in the bunch.
Okay.
And it doesn't show. So if you go for a good sculptor, I think the style doesn't even show. So the type of sculpting doesn't even show.
Yeah, it's amazing what they can do.
It's
now.
The end result that matters for me. I want the figuring to work with the idea I have in mind.
And the 3D sculpted, 3D modeled or traditionally sculpted, it's going to come down to the artist either way, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, I think you can get good models both ways.
Yes, I'm
just
sure.
Just like you can get bad models both ways. I mean, we've seen some bad 3D.
Oh yes.
Some bad 3D prints.
Just looking bad at the Relic Knight discussion we had, some of the sculpting was good, but it didn't translate well. translate well. So
yeah, and the material they were using. So there's a lot of factors to consider, yes. Right, when you're going to production.
And especially in production, I'm not scale. Going for plastic. I don't have something big like that. That's for sure. It's going to be metal or resin.
Yeah, and I mean, but sometimes you can get some small studios that do some amazing stuff in 3D. Like, what are they called? Dreamforge Games? Ones that did the Leviathan, and they have the Eisenkern. So, you know, they have some nice models, you know, all from that Kickstarter. And it really impressed me. It's one guy essentially doing all the design. It's his idea and his stuff. And, you know, he contracted with, I think it's Warlord that does his production. Oh, yeah, possibly. It's Warlord. Warlord Games does the production for him. And, you know, his results are amazing. You know, all stemmed from basically Titan replacements, right?
Yes.
And his first models actually were faux Titans.
Yeah, you had one.
No.
It's in the same batch?
Before the Leviathan models, he did things that looked like Imperator Titans and whatever, and they were very limited production run. And there was only a few of, right?
Yeah.
For extremely high cost.
Games Workshop
will come down on you pretty hard, yeah. Yeah. And they did the Leviathans, and the Leviathans were in resin. And they're like $400 a model still, right? Because he was doing small production runs, and it's a really detailed model. And the plastic one, you know, I've got a couple of those. What a great model for the price, you know, for $100 or less price point. But I think it's about $100 Canadian. And I think they can go down to like $75 US on sale.
Wow.
It's an amazingly detailed model, articulated, and it's, you know, the instructions leave a little bit to be desired, a little unclear sometimes. But overall, went together phenomenally. The plastic is really hard, but mold lines were practically non-existent. Like, it was well put together on the sprue. Great kits. So, you know, all goes to show, it just depends on... It's the combination of things, right? It's the talent, the sculpts, the concept, the production, the materials. So any one of those things goes wrong, you're out of luck. So
hopefully we'll have a good mix.
Yeah.
But we'll see. That's still far off.
Okay, and last class we signed up for, or I signed up for, was color theory, because I am terrible with colors. It is so, like I said, everything I do is a shade of dark. I don't know what it is. I have no eye for colors and contrast, and I can't put it together. You know, and it was funny, like the Warriors, right? The reasons the Warriors at Chaos are taking so long
is because
I keep changing stuff. So, you know, I get all the cloaks done. Like, oh, I don't like them. Okay, so I'm going to redo all the cloaks. Okay, now I'm going to do... I get all the fur trim done. I get the models are complete. Oh, I just want to change the color of the fur trim because I don't like it all of a sudden. Because I realize it doesn't really work or it looks odd or... Yeah, so it's like I got to do every model twice. And like today, I redid all the metallics. Because I realized the metallics weren't very good. I mean, I'm not great with metallics to begin with, but these are really bad. So
weren't you just doing fur today? So you
no, the fur's all finished. The I did the fur over the course of the... Okay. Yeah, yeah. So today I did skulls, because Warriors of Chaos have skulls all over.
Yeah, Game Workshop models have skulls all over.
Yes.
Anyway.
I think in the far future, not only is there only war, there's only skulls. They make buildings out of it. They run vehicles on pulverized skulls. Anyway, GW's artistic decisions aside. So the models have tons of skulls on them, so I'm painting that. Or I painted those. And I did all the brass, all the highlights on the brass on the skull crushers.
That's true. You're still working on those at the same time.
Yeah, so I've got one skull crusher left to do the highlights on the brass. And then after that, I think I just have to do their banner poles.
Oh, good.
And so after that, they're done. Or done-ish. I have to do basing, but I can't decide. I did my test model, as you saw, and it's funny, we're back on hobby section now. We're going backwards. But I don't know if I like the base on me. I have to redo them. Anyway, so. Yeah, all that to say, I have no eye for color. I mean, even when I picked out colors for the Warriors of Chaos, it was you that helped me, because you pulled out your color wheel and you started looking, trying to figure out what would be a good complementary and good contrasting colors, and
I don't really have a good eye, but I'm used to working with a color wheel just because I know I'm not good at just picking it from myself. So I start using one to have stuff that doesn't look too bad.
Yeah, I have like hundreds of jars of paint at home. Like my paint collection is crazy. Full line of Minotaur, almost a full line of Privateer Press. Huge chunks of Vallejo Air, huge chunks of Game Color. I think I have the whole line of Game Color from Vallejo. And then I have, I don't know how many things of GW paints from different generations or whatever. So I probably have, 350 bottles of paint, of which I think I use 15 colors.
All dark.
Yeah, all dark. Most of them shades of brown, yeah.
Yeah, dark or wash to make stuff darker.
Give away all my secrets. Yeah, so I think the color theory will really help. At least I figure I'll learn something, right?
Yeah, true.
So that's it for classes, because everything's sold out so quick.
Yes.
I mean, I'll pick up some generic tickets when we're there, and maybe we can sneak in. And
yeah, the class we were speaking about, the two-brush blending by Meg Maples, that's one thing she say. Go to the class, just to see, and there might be spots left or more space than
what she predicted.
Than she predicted. So.
Well, that happened last year. So last year when I went to Gen Con, we took a painting class, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the artist's name. It was called the Painting True Metallics Truthfully. And it was a great class. It wasn't a hands-on class. Most of these classes at Gen Con aren't, because it's not enough time to do a hands-on painting class, right? So it's theory. And it was 2 hours, and we sat there, and we looked at a bunch of different models. And he passed around, actually, a bunch of models he won awards with, whatever, and discussed technique. And he was all about washes. So it was very interesting. But the thing was, we're in this giant room. There was our class. There was one on casting, I think, like Herstart's casting type stuff.
Okay.
And one other small, group.
In the same room at the same time?
Yeah, but this room, you had to think of a gymnasium with, dividing walls. Like a big ballroom at a convention center in a hotel where you have, the walls that retract.
Yes, yes.
So a big, giant room with three sets of, 20 people and probably, enough for another 200 people. Tons of space.
Okay.
Tons of space that just wasn't used.
Oh, it might be.
So it may be feasible if we're in those rooms again for her classes, then it may be feasible that we can just get in with a generic and sit and listen. Because again, I don't think it's a hands-on class, right? I think it's a...
I don't think so, because when she do our 2-day classes, the first day is two brush blending. So I don't think she can do that hands-on in 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly. It would be really cool to get a class like that together up here. Maybe one of the local...
Yep.
Local well-knowns to instruct us. Yeah. We should maybe look into organizing something like that.
Yeah, we already talked about that with Mathieu Fontaine.
Yeah, doing airbrushing and stuff. About,
having Meg Maples come too. So.
Well, it's a big trip for her.
Yeah, that's all she does right now. She went to Australia twice, or she's going back, something like that.
Oh, well, okay.
For classes, and if she do...
If we get enough people, make it interesting.
That's all we need. We need to pay. She went to Toronto last year, or earlier this year, for classes. Some of the guy from Lost Hemisphere, we're speaking about it, and the other come up to Toronto, do the 2-day classes.
Wow, I wonder how many... We got to pay her flight, and you got to pay her whatever her rate is. So I wonder how much we'd have to charge. That's something to look into.
Yep.
Anyway, so, it's Gen Con, tons of classes. It's amazing how much they offered, but everything sold out so fast this year, from housing to classes. It's going to be packed.
Yes.
It's going to be crazy.
Well, I can only
see
how it goes. You went last year.
Yeah.
And stuff sold out faster this year?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
We booked our room. I want to say last year we booked our room in February or January.
So late?
So late, yes, exactly. And this year all the housing blocks sold out
in the first day?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy this year. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I'm pretty sure we booked it after Christmas last year. We did everything late last year. Because we weren't sure how many people were going, because it was you know, myself, a friend, and his girlfriend. We weren't sure if she was coming and how many tickets we needed, and he wasn't sure what the finances were. So, yeah, it's an experience. And that first day, I mean, you walk through the place and there's, as you know, there's different types of gamers, right?
Yes.
And there's some gamers where you're like, I don't mind being associated with that person. And there's other gamers where like, I want nothing to do with them because they make me look bad. Yeah, Gen Con's a great mix of all types of gamers.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It's worth seeing. And, you know, the vendor hall is just amazing.
That's one it's of like, the main reason
I'm it's like going Christmas for a miniature game, Wargamer, right?
To browse through. I don't even have so much stuff I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
I'm just looking forward to browsing.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of stuff last year that I was really interested in, and I came home with like $1,000 worth of stuff.
Yeah, I can't afford that much.
I couldn't afford
my
it.
My wife will kill me when I come back.
My wife doesn't know, so it's like, well, she might now. Crap.
Okay. She might not listen.
Here's hoping. maybe it wasn't that much, but anyway, it was a lot.
Don't play the number.
Yeah,
it's safer.
Some of the stuff wasn't for me, so I'm trying to think how much I actually fit. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, and it's really cool to get to talk to, the vendors themselves. Like, I spent a lot of time talking with Ken from Badger. The owner of Badger Airbrushes, and super interesting guy, you know, all kinds of insight into different airbrushes. And, you know, I was talking about his airbrushes compared to his competitors, and, you know, it was really interesting to see. He wasn't necessarily like, oh, their brush is garbage and you should be using it in mine. He was like, oh, no, that'll do great. For what you know, if you have that brush to do that with, you know, he says, that'll do that all day. He says, you know, that's great for that. So it was really, you know, insightful. And same, you know, talking to Dave from Hawk War Games, you know, yeah. Getting his insights into, you know, what the new faction he was sculpting, and seeing some of the, you know, the concepts, and seeing the sneak preview miniatures he had there, and talk to him about, because he's really, really excited about his product. So it makes it interesting. And you'll see, you know, artists, you know, because the vendor hall is not just miniature stuff.
Yeah, there's the artist alley.
There's too. Artist alley, and there's like, which is a bunch of, you know, smaller people. It was funny. So across from
Hawk. So they're all dwarf?
Yes, they're all dwarves. That's exactly what I meant. Smaller companies, right? Independents doing stuff, artists, you know, making jewelry, making, you know, portraits and artwork. And across from, I think it was across from Hawk War Game. There was a boutique selling, what are they called? Yeah, exactly.
Corsets,
thank you. And some people have no, not no shame, but no...
No body shame?
Well, yeah, there's no... They just don't care what people see or think, right? So I happened to be at the booth where this pretty young woman decides she wants to try on a corset, and... So stuff starts coming off so she can try on this corset.
Wow.
I looked at Simon from Hawk War Games like, you have the best booth. yeah, so there's all kinds of stuff there. And you can spend all day playing games because everyone's doing demos. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff I want to try this year. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, you too, you have a list of stuff you want to try.
Yeah, there are something else we're registered for. It's not on the list there, but we have a small game. It's a small organized game. Ants at the Picnic, like Ants Fight.
Insect Fight. What is that? I
don't know. The title sounded cool. The description sounded cool.
Was that when you booked for me?
Yes.
Because I saw it. I was like, I don't remember booking that.
No, I did.
Yeah, it's like Ants at the Picnic. And yeah. I was like, okay. And it's rules for something.
Yes. I think there are generic rules that he adapted for that. And I don't have any more clue than that.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
In any case, we're staying. Our hotel is at the Crown Plaza, so it's right next to the convention center. So, convenient. And actually, a lot of our classes are being offered in that hotel.
In the same hotel, yeah.
So, yeah, we lucked out on that one.
But I think that's all we have registered.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like I said, we'll get some generics.
Yeah, because we'll browse and see. And there's probably a ton of other events that have been added since we looked through.
Yeah, yeah, they're always adding stuff, right? So, there'll be stuff to check out. And, you know, also we're supposed to hang out slash meet up with Dave Witek from Garage Hammer, because I have some bits for Chris Yu, and I have something special for Dave. So I'm going to bribe him. I don't know what I'm going to bribe him for, but I'm going to bribe him with a figure. So that's what we're taking there for classes. And so what games are you looking to play there? Because I know there's all kinds of demos going on, right? So what do you really want to demo?
What I really want to see is Bushido by DGS Game, something like that.
Yeah.
Now I'm not sure of the company name. It sounds something like that.
They have some awesome sculpts. I spent some time
talking. They have some awesome sculpts, and some not so awesome, but the games don't take a lot of minis.
Yeah, I think all the recent sculpts are really good. I think they're older stuff. I mean, like a lot of companies, right?
Yes. Yeah, and I like the concept. It's a fast skirmish game that plays on a 2x2.
And it's like fantasy Japan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know it's actually getting to be more available in North America, because last year when I talked to them at Gen Con, they had just signed new distribution in the States.
Oh, that's
good. And had another one coming on board. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember who they signed up, but I think they had e-figures on route, like on the table, coming as a distributor as well. So it's gonna have some good availability, I think. And the game gets rave reviews online, so that's another one. That's one I actually want to try myself. Yeah. So maybe we can get a game against each other, and you can kick my ass like you always do.
We'll see. What are you looking up to?
So what am I looking forward to? Well, Bushido, as we mentioned, but I'm also looking forward to trying Robotech RPG Tactics. So you know, a little bit of nostalgia. I was a child of the 80s, right? So I remember seeing this show. I watched it every Saturday morning. And last year when I was there, they were demoing the game, but it was so busy that I didn't get the chance to try it. The miniatures look amazing. They are pretty much exactly what I remember from the cartoons. And the game looked dynamic. If I recall correctly, it was an action point based, you know, game where your models have a certain amount of actions to perform. The Zentradi basically are Horde army versus the Elite army for the UN Spacey, which are the humans trying to defend Earth. I don't know if you ever saw Robotech as a kid.
I remember seeing some, you know, bits of the shows.
Okay.
But not a lot.
In the show, the humans fight in transformable airplanes called Veritex. So in the game, you actually have three models to represent each model, because your Veritech has three different modes.
That's
a jet
cool.
mode, a hybrid mode, and a battleoid mode, like a robot mode. So you have models to represent each form, and you can switch, and they have different profiles depending on what form you're in. So that's pretty cool. And that's a Kickstarter game. I don't think it's shipped yet to the Kickstarter backers.
No, it isn't. I'm following Ninja Division, which are the producer.
Yeah, and I think there's actually some complaints, because they're going to have some units for sale at Gen Con.
Yeah.
And people are mad because the backers haven't gotten their stuff yet.
Something like that, yeah.
But, I mean, it's no different than Myth, right, from Mercs. I understand. Gen Con's a big sale opportunity.
Yeah.
And I was listening to someone say, one of the resellers or vendors, basically saying that his Gen Con sales, I think it was Impact, his Gen Con sales for those 4 days was more than his quarterly sales.
Wow. It's like Gamer Christmas.
Yeah, so like it's hard for a small company to say no.
Right? About that, yeah.
And Palladium, at one point Palladium was big in terms of role-playing games and stuff. But nowadays...
They're not what they were in current days. Yeah.
Well, it's that industry isn't what it was. Yeah. Role-playing games in general have gone down. I mean, companies that we thought would never go anywhere. And White Wolf, when in the 90s, yes. White Wolf was king.
Was
right?
So big.
And now it doesn't exist anymore. The IP's all been bought out. So, you know, it's a testament to Palladium that they're still around. Right? Kevin must be doing something right. So, if I was a backer, I'd forgive him for selling some stuff at Gen Con. It just makes sense. Aside from that, I don't think there's anything else I'm really looking to try. I haven't seen anything new and wonderful. Maybe I'll go by the Mantic booth, see if I can't get some demos of of, you know, Dreadball or
something. I want to try Dead Zone if I can. I heard great things about Dead Zone.
They may have some terrain on sale there too, so I'll pick that up.
Yeah.
And get a close look at the models. I may have been kind of looking at some of the Mantic models.
May have.
Well. You know.
Yeah, I know you.
I've got a problem, okay? Shut up.
There's nothing else that I'm looking forward to because I know I want to visit. I want to visit the Privateer Press booth because they always have pre-sales or stuff like that. And I'm a big War Machine and Ords guy.
I'll warn you ahead of time.
Yeah, the line was going to be crazy, I know.
Well, also, like last year, they sold out of everything. Like by the end of day one, it was just, forget it.
Yeah, I need to go Thursday. Yeah, I know. But and the other thing, I want to go, but that's not a required stop. The only required stop I have is Bushido. But after that, I want to see all the small games that we don't really hear about. And maybe buy a couple of starter Robux and stuff like that to read on the way and try new games. Yeah. That's what I like. That's a complaint my friends have, that I buy too much small stuff and get them all to play, and we have too many small games. So
yeah, no comment.
I'm looking forward to it. And maybe getting in True Dungeon.
Oh yeah,
we didn't get a ticket for it because it was all crazy. The stuff was almost all already full.
Yeah,
or there was only one place in one place in another. But with generic tickets, we can go. We are only two, so if you want to do it too,
yeah,
I'm sure we could fill in a group that's not full and try that out.
Yeah, no, I tried to get into it last year, and it was sold out, and it was impossible to get into. But it looked like it's kind of fun. I think, you know, the other game I think I want to try is, I know Impact Miniatures has I think it's them that has a game like Elf Ball or something like that. It's basically a Blood Bowl equivalent.
Yes, yeah, Elf Ball, I think. I think you're right.
I'd really like to play a fantasy. I mean, I'm going to play Dread Ball with you. I've got my Forge Fathers team that you got me, and that's great. And that's actually my painting bench. But I really miss that idea of fantasy football. And we could just play Blood Bowl.
True.
Which is a great game, but it's long.
Yeah. It's kind of slug.
Yeah. And it's a good game.
But we could play with timer. If you play by the rules, it goes pretty fast. But I never played with the timer.
Really? I've never seen that.
Yes, timing in the game.
I haven't read the rules in several editions.
Yeah.
I
looked through them.
The last time I read the rules was the year before. You remember when they redid the rules, and then like 3 months later they retconned it and got rid of it all? A few years back,
I don't remember.
So yeah, they released like a new rule book at one point. I think it was Jervis's doing. He'd rewritten it, and then everyone hated it, so they kind of went back to like the living old rule book. So I tried reading it then, and of course, then everything changed again. I was like, oh, whatever. And I remember. The local gaming store, they'd made this giant Blood Bowl board. Well, it was funny because, you know, they had this whole idea they were going to make a league. So they built this giant board. And I kind of looked at it. And I was like, guys, what's this for? They're like, oh, it's Blood Bowl. It's the exact number of squares. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, Blood Bowl has a pass ruler, right?
Oh, true. They made it bigger. Yeah.
So, like, the size of the board matters because your ruler, unless you made it to scale, in which case you can just scale up the ruler, which of course they hadn't done.
Dual custom ruler.
Yeah. Like you made a board without knowing how. Okay. Only at our gaming store.
Yeah.
Great guys. But this is so funny. Anyway. Yeah. It's a little off topic there. So I guess that's it.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be fun. And. But
at the very least,
we'll see there.
We're right next to the pub, so.
Yeah, at worst, we sit down, get a pint or two, and we have so many friends there that people we see at other conventions that I'm sure we can drink far too much.
We can always find an excuse to drink, right?
Oh,
we,
yes.
We can make new friends. If we don't find our old friends, we can make new friends. It's true. All good. All right. So I guess that wraps up episode zero.
Yeah. So I hope you like what you hear. Give us comments. Where you'll find a feed, there will probably be a way to comment to us. We don't know that yet. So.
Or worst case, you can go to our Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook. Or if you go to our webpage, you'll find links to our Facebook and Twitter. So if you go to geeksofthenorth.com. You'll find the link on the main page on the right-hand side, a little ways down. And, you know, content's coming for the website, so there'll be show notes and other interesting things up there. And, yeah, hope you actually all come back for episode one when we come back from Gen Con. So that's it. Take care. See you next episode.
See you. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.